We have Martin here. Martin has been looking into LLMs, and I think this year everyone has been looking into LLMs, whether they want to or not. Just the other day, I was looking at some products on the internet. I was shopping and looking around for tech products, and I didn't see reviews. What I did see was a weird summary of reviews, like, customers find the product reliable and reasonably priced. They say it works well and is a good investment. There are mixed opinions on the build quality and buttons. Who asked for this? Maybe Martin can help us figure it out. Welcome, Martin.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. Can you hear me okay? Excellent. Okay, so I'm Martin. I'm going to do, I've called this a deluxe remix of a talk I did at Electromagnetic Field, EMF, earlier this year. So if you came to that talk, you can leave now. I won't judge you. But there are some new bits, and I hope that the new bits, for anyone who was at EMF, will make it worth staying. If you do want to just watch the EMF talk, there's a QR code there, and I promise you it's not a Rickroll. Probably. But in essence, really, here's where we are. You wouldn't teach a rock to think using lightning, etc. But we kind of have. This is where we are now. And what I want to do in this talk is really kind of pick away at where do we go next. But before I do that, where are we now? Well, things have been kind of getting progressively worse for quite a while, actually before the AI, or before the large language model AI. So you go off and you try and find something on the internet. Increasingly, it's hard to find the actual content. You're finding sponsored content, you're finding ads, you're finding providers who are promoting their own products and services, putting them higher up the ranking. And there's a whole industry of people out there who are just creating content for search engine optimization, to drive clicks, to drive eyeballs to adverts that they host on their content farms, and so on. More recently, we've seen a whole load of malvertising. So you find an advert that turns out to be a link to malware, which maybe compromise your machine. You probably don't want to do that. And there's this kind of worrying transition, particularly in the last maybe year or two, where the tools of surveillance capitalism have been kind of turning into surveillance fascism. So, you know, we can see this in, for instance, in the United States, where search queries are being used to guide law enforcement to who is violating the new laws that have been put into place around healthcare and support for pregnancy, for termination. And things like where I live in the UK, search providers being told, okay, we're not going to let you talk about hormone therapy. So someone here who maybe is thinking about a gender transition, you maybe can't get support for it. Maybe you could just go off and Google it. Maybe you could find out the DIY HRT. No, those sites have been removed from the search results. So this is all a little bit sinister. If you were a blob cat, you might want to hug your Blaha at this point. But that was before. That was before the LLMs. So we had all that, and now we have the LLMs as well. And I'm using the warning sparkles here. These are the AI warning sparkles. What can we learn? Well, we can learn that you can use gasoline to make a spicy spaghetti dish. So that's one spicy meatball. Cats are not able to pick up and fire a gun like a child, but they are very inquisitive and they will explore every part of the home. So it is important to talk to your cats about gun safety. And these are real AI enhanced results. And of course, we can laugh at them because they're patently ridiculous. This is just nonsense. Not always so obvious. And a good example here that's come up recently is around mushroom foraging. So a lot of people are like, hey, I'm gonna find some food. I'm gonna forage for food. I'm gonna go out into the woods. I'm gonna pick some mushrooms and maybe other things too. That mushroom in the picture on the right does not exist. That's a hallucinated mushroom, which maybe isn't such a bad thing. Imagine if that was a real mushroom that had been mislabeled and you're there looking at it and thinking, oh, hey, this one's okay. What could possibly go wrong? I'm gonna eat this mushroom. Don't do that, by the way. It turns out there's a whole ecosystem of people publishing e-books using this kind of generative content, which is not edited, as literally I prompt the large language model, some stuff comes out, I put it in a book. And, you know, foraging for food, and particularly for mushrooms, this is just one example. There's a whole load of this stuff. The real issue, though, I think, is what I'm calling poisoning the well. So when we are trying to find stuff, which of the information, which of the images that we find, like those mushrooms, which ones are real? Actually, how can we tell? How can we tell now what is real on the internet? And people in this room might say, okay, I know there are some sites that I probably am kind of trusting, and I'm okay with the stuff on these sites. There's a bunch of other sites which I'm not so sure about. Maybe that's something that we can build on. Maybe it's something we could use as part of our search survival strategies. So I'm talking about it from the point of view of not just the everyday person who maybe is thinking about going mushroom foraging, but also those people that I mentioned earlier on who are in real peril. They're in danger. And if we can, we can kind of find ways to support them. Why the sheep? And the blob on the right is a blob goat. Why the sheep and why the goat? Well, we're kind of encouraged to behave like sheep. We're not sheep, but we're kind of herded and steered towards particular destinations. You will use the internet this way. You will use these apps and they will work this way. I think an audience like this one, you'll be very contemptuous of that. No, we won't. We won't use your app at all. We'll write our own. We'll, decode the packets as they come down the wire and we'll decide what we do with them. But a lot of people don't have that level of technological sophistication. They don't know how. So what I'd like to do is to help a load of people to become the inner goat. Right now, they're being encouraged to be a sheep, and we want more people to find their inner goat. If you're a goat, you recognize no rules, there are no laws. If you need to climb over a fence, you'll climb over it. Maybe you'll eat the fence, and you'll climb on anything, you'll eat anything, you don't care. So be more goat. How can we do that? Well, I will say it starts to get very technical very quickly. So what can a regular person do? Well, a regular person could add UDM equals 14 to their Google search URL. And what does it do? It hides a load of the garbage. And so your Google search results are more true to what you maybe would have seen 5-10 years ago, before all the extra stuff started to come in. If you're a regular person, you might be able to use other search engines. You might be able to change your default search engine. I've got a screenshot on the right showing how you could add that UDM equals 14 parameter to a regular Google search. And that's a thing you might be able to do. And again, you might be able to use a browser extension like uBlock Origin or the unfortunately named uBlacklist. And the little GIF that's playing in the right, that's uBlacklist. And there's someone there going, "Hey, Wikipedia, I don't trust you." And they're blocking Wikipedia from their Google search results. Now, ironically, Wikipedia is probably now, at this point, one of the most trustworthy sites. So we can laugh about that. Remember when Wikipedia wasn't? What does that look like? What does that UDM equals 14 parameter look like? The image on the left here, some of these images and quotes are taken from blogs and articles which may be useful to look at, and we'll try and find a way to share those links with you afterwards. What does it look like right now? The image on the left, it's an entire page of AI overview and rich snippets, as they're called, little helpful factoids. Where are the actual results? The image on the right is what you get if you put that magic parameter into Google. You can get it in another way, which is a little bit hidden, which is to click on the word web that I've circled in red in the screenshot. Now, why am I kind of laboring the point here? This is stuff that I think is just about okay for regular folk, people who don't write their own compilers and don't implement their own network protocols or whatever. But it does start to get pretty technical. So depending on your perspective, the little multicolored rotating sheep down there might be feeling empowered because they've discovered uBlock Origin, and they've discovered the thing I have in the screenshot there, which is a huge AI block list. So it's a block list crowdsourced, open source, you can just get this off GitHub, of sites which are entirely or heavily featuring generative AI imagery. So you don't want to see that stuff? Okay, just plug this list into your uBlock Origin. Now, I want you to imagine the least technologically sophisticated person you know and think about how much work that's going to be. You're going to say, okay, so there's this thing you need to get from the Chrome extension store or whatever Chrome derivative you're using, and you need to go to this weird website and you need to add this stuff to your uBlock configuration. It's going to be a stretch. It's going to be tricky. If you can do it, yay, you get a search that has none of the AI-generated garbage imagery that's come to proliferate. You try and do an image search on the internet right now without this, it's all AI slop. But it's getting a little bit technical. And unfortunately, that uBlock Origin, well, people here probably know, who knows about the Chrome extension manifest version 3. Put your hand up if you know about that. Yeah. Okay, so this audience knows that your Chrome-derived browser is already or will probably soon be saying, mm-mm. And the real issue there is there are so many Chrome-derived browsers, eventually people are just going to have to say, okay, we'd love to maintain the old version 2 manifest, like Firefox have said they'll do, but the technical debt is mounting up. So those people who want to keep compatibility in their Chrome derivatives with the older extensions like uBlock Origin may eventually just reach a point where they can't anymore. They just have to say, we don't have the resources. It's great that Firefox is there, though. I mean, this feels like Firefox's moment. Firefox has been there kind of in the background. You know, hey, we're still here. Now, Firefox might be your natural port of call if you want to get a more privacy-friendly internet, if you want to get an internet which still lets you run those extensions. We should keep in mind, though, that Manifest version 3 was all about making it harder for you to inadvertently run some random code from some random website being updated without any code review. So the whole point of Manifest version 3 from Google's perspective is we want to check what code your browser is going to run as part of the Chrome extension store review. So there was a good point to it. It's a laudable aim, but it's been used in a way that really affects our privacy and it affects our exposure to advertising content. And this is all way too technical now, because you just picture your unsophisticated friend or relative. I need you to use Firefox now. Yeah, it's different. Everything is in different places. You have to get all your bookmarks imported and so on. It's a lot of work. So why not just, let's make our own search engine, you know? How hard could that be, right? And my quip here, my joke is we're going to need a bigger VPS, we're going to need a bigger virtual private server. And if you're used to running a VPS that costs you maybe a few euros a month, prepare yourself, because this it's going to be a little bit more expensive. If you want a data point or two, there's this initiative called a common crawl, which goes out, crawls the internet and posts public data sets which you can download. You can also interrogate them. There's an API. So these data sets are pretty big. The screenshot on the right talks about the December 2024, this month, data set release. And we're talking about 2.64 billion web pages and hundreds of terabytes content. It's a lot. We're going to need a bigger VPS, this is for sure. Incidentally, if you don't want the common crawl to visit your site, unlike many other crawlers, you can actually tell it not to. So there are a lot of crawlers which simply ignore your robots.txt. And so common crawl crawls with a well-defined user agent and a well-defined IP address range. So you really can say no. That's a few crawlers out there. We probably aren't going to run our own crawler, okay? You know, collectively we might do it. If you do a bit and he does a bit and she does a bit, maybe we could do it that way. But the idea of running a big kind of centralized web crawling operation, you need a lot of resources to do that. This is a map that Mojik produced. It's probably a little bit out of date now because it doesn't include all of the AI crawlers, which are desperately trying to find new stuff to feed into large language models. Also, doesn't include Baidu, so it's an incomplete map. But what it's really saying is there are only a few organizations that have the resources to go off and crawl the web, index those pages at scale. Surprising, actually, how many of the search engines that you may interact with, pick an example, Yahoo. Does anybody here still use Yahoo Search? No. But maybe you use Ecosia, or maybe you use Quant. Quite a few of the searches that are out there that you may well be using on a day-to-day basis. Really, it's just three Bings in a trench coat. So we'll take the Bing results, we'll just kind of massage them a bit, we'll put our logo on, and there isn't that innovation, there isn't that indexing infrastructure for search and ranking of results, all of that other stuff. We just kind of take the Bing and we just kind of pimp it up a little bit. If we were going to do it, what would we really need? What would those resources really need to be? So this is Chat Noir, the European search engine, which uses that common crawl database. And so you can actually see here, they post an awful lot of information publicly about how that works. If you have 145 cluster nodes doing nothing very much, maybe you have a supercomputer in your basement, maybe 4 petabytes of storage, 30 terabytes of RAM, you can do this too. Obviously, they're doing it right now, and this is very interesting. The other thing, though, is that the common crawl is updated periodically. And so when I was talking about the AI crawlers feeding all your super new AI search engines, if you've run a website, you probably see they hit your website almost continuously because they're so desperate for new material. You don't get that with common crawl. You get this kind of monthly update. Anything new, anything contemporaneous, something that came up before that monthly update, maybe it's not going to be in there. So, okay, we talked about our unsophisticated user and how things pretty quickly got overwhelmingly complicated for them. And we talked about the difficulty of being your own search engine operator. Maybe there's something else. So maybe there's something else. And this is my option three, or level three, if you think of a sort of pathway to enlightenment. And I'm going to make some suggestions. So the first one is, maybe we were wrong to think about searching everything. Maybe that was viable back when the internet was small and there were only a few billion web pages. Maybe we need to rethink how we think about search, and maybe it's more about domains. I don't know, maybe I'm into astronomy. I want to do some searching around my special interest in astronomy. Or maybe it's about community. Maybe I'm part of a community of amateur astronomers or something like that. Making a search which links to those affinities, it links to those interests that are driving the search, the intent that's driving the search. Maybe there's something in there. We can talk about search engines that exist already, and that's not just the big ones like the Bings. It's also the smaller ones, the domain-specific ones, for instance. Maybe you want to integrate, I don't know, something like Wikipedia search. Maybe that would be quite useful. And there are these things called meta search engines which will let you do that. I'll talk about an example of that in a moment. And then we talked about those shared block lists. So the big AI shared block list. There's also things like RSS feeds, which are very sadly neglected nowadays. We could do a lot more with RSS. And something that I've recently started to get very interested in is in the Fediverse, we see trending hashtags, we see trending links, and maybe we could do something with those in a privacy-preserving way. I think that's key, because as soon as you start saying, hey, we're harvesting stuff off the Fediverse, people start to throw rotten tomatoes. And what could that look like? I've been playing with a thing called SearchNG, which is a little bit of open source code. I think it's mostly Python. It's got plugins for about 70 different data sources. So you can run your own SearchNG instance. It's not the only meta search engine. It's the one that I've been playing with. Plugins for all kinds of things. And there's about 70 of them. Lots and lots of domain-specific search engines. Maybe you want to, I don't know, the Library of Congress or something like that. Maybe quite niche and specific like that. But we could also feed in other sources. Because it's open source, we could plug other things into it. So I'm quite interested in hacking around with it to see if some of those things that I've talked about today could be encouraged to become part of a meta search. You can get a Docker image, so it's very lightweight, it's very easy to play with. And I'd say the resource requirements are minimal. There's a search engine running on my phone. So we often talk now about how your phone has 10 or 100 times the computing power required to, you know, take people to the moon. Probably a lot more than that. So with a few command line instructions in Termux, which is the kind of unlocks the Linux environment in your Android phone, you can have your own search engine. You can have your own meta search. It won't obfuscate your IP address, so people will still see your queries are coming from a particular IP. I've heard there's this thing called Tor that might help with that. What's scrolling by in the GIF is searches for things that would ordinarily find you a whole load of garbage. So things like COVID vaccines, chemtrails, things that would normally get you absolute nonsense. And 5G mobile safety, you know, we've heard a lot of strange things about that. It's possible to do search in a different way. So this meta search is pulling in results from lots of different places. It's kind of blending them around in a way that you control. And you know, it could be in your pocket. It could be running on this phone right now. It could be running on your phone later on. So I talked about the interesting thing with the Fediverse is surfacing the interest, surfacing the intent. So here's an example. She won't be able to read, most likely, up on that screen, but it's to illustrate how easily we can use the Mastodon API to fetch a list of trending links. This has to be turned on, so chaos.social, maybe that's a good thing. Mastodon.social, So we get all the trending links from mastodon.social with a single command line call to the Mastodon API. I say Fediverse and then I say Mastodon. Obviously, Mastodon has an oversized influence on the Fediverse. Not every piece of software implements the Mastodon API, and a lot of them probably never will. But this is what you can do with it. And then the second screenshot is just extracting the names of the sites. So we've been able to say, these are the kind of sites that people who are part of that conversation that's taking place on mastodon.social are talking about. And the RSS feeds, it gets a little bit more interesting there, I think, from a privacy perspective, because when we're looking at things like what are the trending tags, that these are the trending tags on chaos.social earlier today, fence the fry tag, did the person whose handle is appearing in the bottom screenshot expect that their name was going to appear on a big screen in front of a whole load of people later on today? Did they even know where their post was going to end up? Maybe not. So we need to figure out how to do, if we want to do this kind of thing, how to do it in a privacy-protecting way. And so this is my final slide. I hope that what I've been talking about here today has been interesting, at least for some of you. And thank you. Thank you very much for your attention. You'll see a link on the slide to a matrix space, which I'm calling Search Club. So if you're exercised about this stuff, if you think, I might want to do something, I might want to get involved, I want to make search a little bit better, maybe have a think about joining this. It's only me right now, but I hope that some of you will join as well. And I pointed out just on here three starter projects that you could imagine Search Club doing. So that mobile implementation, wouldn't it be great if it was just in FDroid and you could just go, boom, get me a meta search engine with a nice user interface for configuring all those plugins. I don't want to have to touch the command line. That community search, maybe it should be part of your Fedi software. Maybe Mastodon, maybe one of the other implementations. Maybe there's a MISCI fork that does this already. And then those block lists, there are an awful lot of trash sites out there, and we don't have good enough intelligence, I think, right now about which ones they are, and getting them into a handy format where we can just say, okay, just don't show me those. So maybe there's a project there too. But you guys probably have quite a lot of ideas for projects, and I'm just the person standing up here and saying, I've created a space where you're very welcome to come along and continue this conversation. I'm hoping to do a meetup at some point over the weekend, so I'll pop a note on there and I'll pop it on the 38C3 hashtag in the Fediverse. But also happy to take, I don't know if we've still got time for a question or two, and happy to talk to people afterwards. Thank you very much.
Yes, we have time for one question or two. Please raise your hand if you have one. There's one in the back.
Sir, it was an insightful seminar. I just wanted to ask that in this agentic era, where most of the searches will be done by LLM, instance you are researching and you can't do all the manual search, so your LLM will hit up multiple 50s of queries to the API. So what's your take on that? Because you won't know what exact result you are getting. You are just doing the RAG search and getting the insights. So that's the question.
I think that's a very insightful question. So we don't know, and we won't know increasingly if it's a human who's doing the searching. And we should assume increasingly it will probably be autonomous LLM agents. And we might as a community have a view on that. So some people might actually say, I don't want that. I don't want those on my site. It's a possibility.
Further questions? Anyone else? Yep, there's one here. Microphone is coming.
The question is about your proposed solution for block lists versus low quality and SO. It feels like a dead end because there are tens of billions of sites, and you need to filter through like lots of garbage to dig up something decent. So block lists seem like a dead end. So what are your thoughts about this?
So I thought so too. And then I saw the huge AI block list, the block list which is specifically about generative AI images. And there's clearly enough people are pretty mad about those that they're prepared to contribute to that list, they're prepared to collaborate to maintain it. So it may be that the answer is, in particular areas, there are a whole bunch of people who have the motivation to do something.
I think we can take one more question.
Yeah. Hey, thank you for your talk. So if you were thinking a lot about the meta search being a good solution, would it be also a good idea that the individual search engines that you query report some kind of a score on how good is this result, so that the single ones say, okay, now I think I have a good result, or I don't think I have anything that might be valuable to the meta search then?
I think you've hit on the real challenge with meta search is I've got a whole bunch of results from different places. How do I rank them? How do I know? I mean, this engine over here is really confident, but actually it's AI powered, so it's always really confident. Everything is always perfect. And maybe I actually need to kind of moderate whatever a participating engine comes back to me with. I need to weight those responses. But I agree, it's a big and interesting problem. It'll be interesting to have some brains and some people thinking about this.
I believe there was a question back there. No, this question was resolved. Do we have any further questions? So the internet has no questions. All answers were found. I think the thing with AI imagery is that it's coming from artists mostly. This violent opposition is not something that is incredibly widespread in tech. Do you see this fissure as well?
I think it's interesting that there are communities of people who work in technology who they kind of go down the rabbit hole. So everything else is almost irrelevant. The thing that I'm interested in is super important. So, you know, if I'm working in autonomous LLM agents, like our questioner earlier on perhaps is doing, I'm pretty much naturally going to see those as the ultimate solution to every problem because I live, eat, and breathe that particular technology. And I think it's as technologists, which I suspect is a lot of us in the room, it can be quite hard to just sort of step back and say, okay, how is this technology going to be used? And particularly, how could it be used for ill? How could it be used for bad purposes? Not by me, but by someone else.
I think this is a property that is shared by technologists and artists falling down a rabbit hole, just the question of which rabbit hole. Thank you, Martin, for bringing us down this particular rabbit hole. Let's give another round of applause for him.
Thank you.